Harper Audio presents Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West by Gregory Maguire. Read by John McDonough.
Gregory Maguire opens this novel with three quotes, the first from Daniel Defoe. "'Tis very strange men should be so fond of being thought wickeder than they are." The next from Leo Tolstoy. "In historical events, great men, so-called, are but the labels that serve to give a name to an event, and, like labels, they have the last possible connection with the event itself. Every action of theirs that seems to them an act of their own free will is, in an historical sense, not free at all, but in bondage to the whole course of the previous history, and predestined from all eternity." And last, from The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum, "Well," said the head, "I will give you my answer. You have no right to expect me to send you back to Kansas unless you do something for me in return. In this country, everyone must pay for everything he gets. If you wish me to use my magic power to send you home again, you must do something for me first. Help me, and I will help you." "What must I do?" asked the girl. "Kill the Wicked Witch of the West," answered Oz. And now, Wicked.
Prologue. On the Yellow Brick Road. A mile above Oz, the witch balanced on the wind's forward edge, as if she were a green fleck of the land itself, flung up and sent wheeling away by the turbulent air. White and purple summer thunderheads mounded around her. Below, the yellow brick road looped back on itself like a relaxed noose. Though winter storms and the crowbars of agitators had torn up the road, still it led relentlessly to the Emerald City. The witch could see the companions trudging along, maneuvering around the buckled sections, skirting trenches, skipping when the way was clear. They seemed oblivious of their fate. But it was not up to the witch to enlighten them. She used the broom as a sort of balustrade, stepping down from the sky like one of her flying monkeys. She finished up on the topmost bough of a black willow tree. Beneath, hidden by the fronds, her prey had paused to take their rest. The witch tucked her broom under her arm. Crab-like and quiet, she scuttled down a little at a time until she was a mere 20 feet above them. Wind moved the dangling tendrils of the tree. The witch stared and listened. There were four of them. She could see a huge cat of some sort, a lion, was it, and a shiny woodman. The tin woodman was picking nits out of the lion's mane, and the lion was muttering and squirming from the aggravation. An animated scarecrow lolled nearby, blowing dandelion heads into the wind. The girl was out of sight behind shifting curtains of the willow. "Of course, to hear them tell it, it is the surviving sister who is the crazy one," said the lion. "What a witch! Psychologically warped, possessed by demons, insane, not a pretty picture." "She was castrated at birth," replied the Tin Woodman calmly. "She was born hermaphroditic, or maybe entirely male." "Oh, you see castration everywhere you look," said the lion. "I'm only repeating what folks say," said the Tin Woodman. "Everyone is entitled to an opinion," said the lion airily. "She was deprived of a mother's love, is how I've heard it. She was an abused child. She was addicted to medicine for her skin condition." "She has been unlucky in love," said the Tin Woodman, "like the rest of us." The Tin Woodman paused and placed his hand on the center of his chest, as if in grief. "She's a woman who prefers the company of other women," said the Scarecrow, sitting up. "She's the spurned lover of a married man." "She is a married man,"